This is episode number 22 with the founder and CEO of Franchise Fastlane, Ryan Zink. Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. My guest today is Ryan Zink. Ryan's got an incredible entrepreneurial story, and he shares all of it with us in this conversation today. Currently, Ryan serves as the CEO of Franchise Fastlane, the nation's largest franchise sales organization. As Ryan puts it, Franchise Fastlane helps franchisors find franchisees. But prior to co-founding Franchise Fastlane, Ryan has his fair share of experience when it comes to building successful businesses and successfully exiting several of these businesses, as he was able to build them to the point of being acquired by private equity. Ryan is an entrepreneur through and through, and he shares some fantastic advice from his own experience in our conversation today. So with that, let's go ahead and drop in to this week's episode with Ryan Zink. Ryan Zink, how you doing, sir?
Doing great. Happy to be here with you.
Yeah, thank you for dropping into the Path to Freedom podcast with me, man. It's a pleasure to have you.
Something I believe in. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I know you're a busy guy, so I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule. And I definitely am excited to hear more about what you have going on at Franchise Fastlane. You guys are just moving and shaking over there. Exciting stuff. So we'll get into some of that. But you know, maybe let's start off just by sharing a little bit with the audience that may not be familiar with your story, kind of how you got to where you are today. You've got a very long list of entrepreneurial ventures that you've been involved in throughout your career. So maybe share with us a little bit about how you got into entrepreneurship and franchising, and just kind of tell us your story.
Yeah, well, first, I got to tell you, it's one of the things I am most thankful for in my life is the fact that I fell into entrepreneurship and truly fell into it. Didn't have an entrepreneurial. I wasn't one of those kids selling bubble gum or, you know, having employees doing paper routes for me when I was a kid. I got a degree in journalism. I thought
I was really
on the radio doing baseball. But like all things in college, my senior year, I met a girl. She turned into my wife, and she wasn't quite yet ready to graduate. So I went and got a job at a franchise GNC store.
Okay.
And something I was kind of into, health and nutrition, and really didn't think much about it being a franchise. But man, was it lucky for me, because the franchisee was very entrepreneurial. He and I hit it off, and he asked me to run his business as like a COO.
Okay.
And so what we did is we started buying underperforming GNC stores in the Midwest, eventually bought 15 of them.
Wow.
And we applied a little bit of a different model, kind of exclusive product, local marketing, better training. And we grew them. And at one point, five of those 15 were the top five producing GNC stores in the country.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't out of Miami or LA or New York. I mean, we're talking Omaha, Lincoln, Fort Collins.
Yeah, not your major metro markets.
Not at all. And it was because of the business model, right? Not because of the markets. And as you know, in franchising, when somebody's having success, word starts to spread. So the word spreads. Franchisees are calling us, asking us what us farmers in Nebraska are doing.
You know? Right.
So we say, come on out, check it out. So they flew out. They would see what we were doing. And when they went home, they'd say, we want to do this same model. And a lot of it was tied around this idea of an exclusive product in our store.
Okay.
Bringing customers back, lots of customer satisfaction and retention. And so they said, can we buy the product from you? And that's kind of a light bulb moment we had. And we said, yeah, you can buy the product from us. So
nice.
The entrepreneur of the franchise locations started a company called NDS Nutrition, and I partnered with him. So we created this nutrition company that we were only going to sell products to GNC franchisees. And we did not realize what a niche we were getting into that was needed. These franchisees were hurt because their margins were getting affected. Uh-huh. Amazon was coming in pretty hard. They needed a product line that was only found in their stores. And so it skyrocketed. And I mean, it went just like this, absolutely hair on fire skyrocket. And, you know, we were running, trying to keep up for a long time with product development, expiration management, distribution, all those things. And then eventually GNC kind of knocked on the door and said, hey, look, guys, you might be selling a little too much product to also be a franchisee. So sort of had to choose. Corey decided to sell his GNC stores. And we focused just exclusively on the company NDS because it was successful enough. And, you know, eventually we got the itch because to be in retail again, you know, we knew that space. We were the best in the country at it. And so Corey and I started a company called Complete Nutrition. Mm-hmm. And the idea was just to have 5 locations in Omaha and Lincoln. But quickly we had employees knocking on the door saying, can we go open some of these things? So we said, let's test it out as a franchise. So in 2005, we started the company. In 2007, we opened our first franchise locations. And we'll probably get into some of those stories here in a bit.
Sure.
Eventually figured out that we liked the idea of franchising and decided to grow it from there. So we sold NDS. We knew we couldn't, you know, sell products to GNC and also put up stores across the street. So sold NDS to a private equity group that was started by some Coca-Cola executives, focused completely on Complete Nutrition, grew that to be just over 200 locations, about $130 million in sales. And for the next 10 years, just focused on it. Until 2015, when we sold the company to a private equity group that was buying franchise companies. You want me to talk about how that transitions into Fastlane?
I'd love to. Yeah, absolutely. And then we'll circle back. I've got a few questions, but yeah, go ahead and take us through Fastlane, and then we'll circle back to hit on a few questions that came to my mind as you were talking.
Great. So at the time that we sold Complete, I only knew 2 things. I knew nutrition and I knew franchise development. And I couldn't do anything in nutrition, had to sign a 5-year non-compete, which is up here in about 5 months.
Not and, that you're counting, right?
Yeah. So I only knew franchise development. And so Carrie Gilley, our co-founder and president, she just happened to reach out and say, hey, I'm thinking about getting back into franchise development. She was the head of our franchise development at Complete Nutrition for a period of time.
Okay, gotcha.
And say, hey, why don't we go help franchisors find franchisees? And so in January of 2017, Franchise Fastlane was born.
Franchise Fastlane is an amazing story, yet another rocket ship that you've been involved in. I mean, just in terms of the growth trajectory of the company. And I definitely want to spend some more time talking about that. But I mean, I love how you pointed out in the beginning. I mean, you literally did kind of fall into franchising. And it's interesting. I think you were part of it. I know a lot of folks from your team at Fastlane were part of the Franchoice conference that happened virtually a couple weeks ago. And there was actually a small group session dedicated to everyone kind of telling their story about how they got involved in franchising in the first place. And I mean, it was amazing because I would say 90% of the stories that I heard were unintentional. People fell backwards into it. And that was the case for me. And, you know, like you, I feel very, very fortunate. I got introduced to entrepreneurship and franchising in particularly at a much younger point in my career and my life than most people do. And I think it's the biggest blessing, you know, that I could have asked for professionally because it's changed the trajectory of my career and my life in a huge way. So I feel very fortunate for that. But, you know, I'm curious, how did you, because you were right out of college when you started working with this GNC franchisee, is that right?
Yep, right out.
And you kind of, like you said, became the COO of his company. I mean, were you just kind of learning as you went? I mean, what kind of experience were you drawing on to be able to ultimately run 15 different locations? I imagine you were managing a lot of different employees and very, you know, strategic decisions that you were having to make. And then to end up with 5 of the top performing stores in the entire country. I mean, were you just figuring out as you went, or how did you learn that quickly, I guess, is my question.
Oh, yeah. A whole lot of figuring it out as I went. Honestly, looking back, I mean, he's one of my best friends today, but looking back, he probably shouldn't have put me in that spot. you know, he put a tremendous value on sales, and I was really good in the store at the nutritional side and the relating to the customer. And because I had turned this underperforming store around into becoming this, it was the number 2 store in the country, which still bothers me today. We weren't number 1. But he and I hit it off. He liked the fact that I had some sales acumen, and it seemed as if I had a little bit of kind of go get them operational side of the things too. So he said, hey, I'd like you to go into a leadership role. But I made a lot of mistakes and it cost him some money. But I think if you asked him, he'd say over time it was probably a good financial decision. But there was a period of time there where it was nothing but mistake after mistake. It was the old Charlie Munger, I was paying the stupid tax.
Yeah.
I made the mistake once. I tried not to make it again.
Well, and that's how you can learn, right? And that's all you can ask for is that the mistakes you make don't repeat themselves, right? I mean, that's the only way you can learn and grow is through making mistakes. But as long as you're smart enough to learn from your mistakes, which it's clear that you were, You know, that's all that can really be asked of you. Now, you were a college athlete, right? You played baseball.
Yep.
Do you think that played into, you know, you being successful early on in your career at all?
I do, because what you figure out in college athletics pretty quickly is the, and I say it to my kids all the time, who plays? And they say the best. And how do you become the best? You practice. So
that's right.
I mean, you can't go into anything, at least it wasn't my personality to go into anything and say, I'm not going to go try to be the best. Maybe I won't be, but I'm going to try to be it.
That's
and
right.
I think that's what he recognized. You know, I want to kind of say something back to what you said too about falling into entrepreneurship. One of the books that inspired me when I was young to open my first franchise, which was Anytime Fitness, was a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I think it illustrates a lot. I know a lot of people know that book. I think it illustrates a lot why so many people fall into entrepreneurship, right? Because we grow up and we see our parents, most of us anyway, we see our parents working a job. They talked about getting a college degree. At least that was the big sentiment back then.
Yeah.
We'll get a degree, then get a job. And, you know, you kind of have your whole path laid out for you. And that's kind of how I grew up. Go get a good job. But what happens then is all of a sudden somebody says, you know, there's some benefits in entrepreneurship. Then they talk to a guy like you, right? And they tiptoe with no obligation. They tiptoe and to say, tell me more about it. And then all of a sudden they hear the benefits, the lifestyle, the financial, the tax, the, you know, all the benefits. If you have a successful business, what it translates into. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, I want to learn more. I want to learn more. And before you know it, it's like, boom, I'm in. I'm going to fall into entrepreneurship. And especially if they can start in a place that where they can manage the risk. I know for me, one of the things I love about what I do every day, and sorry to kind of transition into this topic.
Oh, it's great.
I love what I do every day because every time we sell something, I know there is a person on the other end that is responsible for a family that is usually going to be a first-time entrepreneur.
Yep.
And I've seen what it's done to my life, and I feel jazzed that I am in a company. I used to love being in nutrition, but I love this even more because we are literally, every time we sell something, somebody is changing their life and becoming more free, I think, to go spend time with their family and do the things that they love.
Well, no doubt about it, right? And that's a big part of why I got into consulting. I worked on the franchise development side for years, got started working for franchisors. We bought our first franchise and it changed our life in a huge way. It gave us more of that freedom and that control of our livelihood. It definitely gave us more financial resources than we would have had working for someone else. And then over time, as we've built this business and added other businesses, it put me in the position where I could go out on my own, get into consulting. And yeah, it's a business for me, but more than anything, it's a way that I see an opportunity for me to help others explore what I've seen firsthand change my life in such a big way. And that's why I wanted to do it. And it was important to me to make sure that, you know, myself and my family, we were in a financial position where I didn't need the income from what I do consulting because I want to do it for the right reasons. I want to really, you know, be in a position to help people, not just, you know, chasing the money that can come with it. So, but I totally agree. I mean, it's rewarding. And to your point, most people, because of the way they were brought up and many other reasons, they don't end up exploring entrepreneurship or franchising in many cases until a later point in their life. You know, most of the people that you work with through Franchise Fastlane that I work with, a lot of times they're going through a career transition of sorts. They've, you know, especially now with everything going on in the world related to COVID-19, there's a lot of layoffs and furloughs, and there's a lot of people out there that have seen firsthand that they don't really have much control over their livelihood when they're working for someone else. And that's given them reason to pause and kind of relook at things and say, hey, what can I do to take a little more control and maybe put myself in a better position to create a better livelihood for myself and for my family. And it's not for everyone, you know, it's not for everyone. And most people are kind of tiptoeing into it. I mean, I get this a lot of times when I start talking to someone about exploring franchises, they're like, Wes, I feel like I got to say, man, like, I don't know for sure if this is the direction I'm going to go in. And I just want to be honest with you. And what I tell people is I'm like, that puts you in the same boat as 95% of the people I work with. Like, it's very rare that I talk to someone and they're like, hey man, I'm for sure going to buy a franchise. Let's do this. Like most people are, it's exploratory when they start this process. And that's what it's all about, is helping people understand it, the pros, the cons, what they need to do to be successful, because there's no guarantees, right? They've still got to put in the work. They've got to follow the model of whatever franchise they're getting into.
Right.
There's certainly not any guarantees, but it's helping them understand it and put all the pieces together and navigate what would be a very overwhelming process if they were trying to take it on themselves.
Couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. It happens to people we work with every day.
It does. And, you know, I feel fortunate. It's something I enjoy doing. I love learning about different businesses and how they work and what you have to do to be successful. So I'm fortunate that I get to get up and do something that I have a lot of fun doing and call it work. Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast. And that's because franchising has had a massive impact on my life. And it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision and you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at Wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode. So I want to circle back because I've got a few other questions about you know, some of your prior experience. So when you guys had all this success with your GNC franchises, you said that you had kind of an exclusive product. Was that something that you developed yourself, or was it something that you went out and kind of negotiated the rights to, or how did that come about?
Yeah, so it was actually the franchisee of the GNC. His name was Corey Weedle, and he did it. So he had a big background in nutrition, and he really understood these things. And there was a small batch manufacturer in Nebraska. Because here's the challenge for most product people, right? They have to go, and if you want to work with a manufacturer, you got these huge minimums that you have to meet, big outlay of cash. Well, he was a good people person. So he went and talked to this small batch manufacturer in Nebraska, said, I got an idea for a product. Here's kind of the base. And then he went out and got a formulator, a chemist, right, to look at it, tweak it a little bit to make sure that we thought it was going to be the right thing, built the product, and then he built the packaging and the marketing message and everything around it. And we just started with that single product. And, you know, all of a sudden, back then it was radio, right? So we had jingles on the radio. We were advertising all over the radio. We ended up on billboards. People came in, they tried the product, they loved it, and they continued to come back. And that's when we said, okay, now we got to move into other categories. And we saw big movers of other product categories, but they were available online or they were available in Walmart at a discounted price. And that just doesn't work. When back then, for a specialty retailer, you're paying, you know, rent and utilities, insurance. You got to have something that's going to be able to drive a little bit of margin, but you're providing additional value to that customer in the consultation and everything else.
Sure.
And so we just continue to repeat that. So originally, before it really grew big, I mean, NDS was probably a dozen products. And then when franchisees wanted to start buying it, we expanded it to probably somewhere between 80 and 100 products.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, but that was the starting point for what turned into NDS was the franchisee, Corey, just kind of went out on his own, had these products formulated. You started just selling them in your 15 GNC locations, and then it just kind of organically grew from there.
Yeah, because we had the success story and other franchisees wanted to follow it. Yep.
Yeah. And it's a great example of how, you know, good franchise systems evolve like that. Usually they learn from their top performing franchisees. And to your point, other franchisees start seeing you have success, and then the phone starts ringing. Everyone's reaching out like, hey, what are you guys doing there in Nebraska? You're crushing it. Your numbers are off the charts. And that's always something I coach people to look at when they're investigating a franchise is, you know, really try to get a sense of how the franchise company has evolved over time. And what you should find in a good franchise company is that they're listening to their franchisees and they're learning from their most successful franchisees, and they're using that as a way that they can continuously evolve and make the all-around system better for everyone involved. So that's a very cool story.
One of my old coaches, mentors, Jack Daly, he used to say, model the masters, right? So the first thing that he would encourage people to do is, you know, whenever he would get into a new sales role or a new business, he would say, who's the best? And whoever was the best, he'd go sit next to them for 3 days and he would just watch them and say, show me, you know, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to ask anything. I'm going to sit here and watch why you are the best. And that is absolutely true in a franchise. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about prior to this was the question of what makes a great franchisor. And I said, they're a listener, they're a communicator, and they're a creator, but it's in that order. First thing you do is you listen. You listen to your very best franchisees and say, tell us, you know, we're sitting here in a corporate office. And we may have a few of our own stores, but the reality is we're sitting in a four-wall office every day trying to figure things out for you. So tell us, Mr. or Mrs. Franchisee, why you are the best.
Yeah.
Once we get that information, we communicate it out to the whole system and say, hey, do you want to hear why this person is the best at this category of the business or best at customer service? You send that all out. And then the last piece of it is you create. You create new models. You create new things. You go out and you test other things to try to make the system continue to evolve and become better. So a listener, a communicator, and a creator.
It's such a good point, and not all franchises do as good a job of that as others. You know, there's examples of franchises out there that, you know, are fairly mature systems, and it's kind of clear if you dig into it that they haven't really evolved, and you know, they've kind of plateaued in some way. And to me, if I'm investigating that particular franchise, that's a bit of a red flag for me. But hey, you mentioned Jack Daly. I know Jack. Jack's been on my podcast.
Oh yeah, I knew that. Yep, he's a great guy, man. That guy's got energy to.
Golly, I tell you what, man. If I'm even lucky enough to live to his age, if I can still do Ironmans and bring the type of energy that he brings to every single day, then I mean, if I can even do half of that, I'll consider myself very blessed. But yeah, no, he's amazing. Cool. He so I'm a Shelf Genie franchisee, and he's been the speaker at a few of our Shelf Genie conferences, and I've gotten to know him a little bit. And yeah, he came on the podcast a couple months ago. I think it's
that's how I got to know him. He was one of the speakers at our Complete Nutrition conferences. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, he's a total rock star, man. He never ceases to amaze. But I think he has the number one most downloaded episode of my podcast so far.
Oh well, I'm going for number two because there's no way I'm going to be able to beat him.
Hey, maybe you can. Who knows? But yeah, we'll have to get a little friendly competition going between you and Jack. But
that's right.
Small world. That's pretty cool. And it sounds like you've got ample experience at this point now with private equity. And that's something that's becoming, you know, more and more common in franchising. You know, private equity for a lot of reasons is attracted to franchising. So, I mean, what are some of the things that you learned in that experience of growing businesses and having successful exits to private equity? I mean, what are two or three of the biggest takeaways from that experience that you've seen and then been able to apply into everything that you're doing now?
Yeah, you got it. Well, I guess the first is the power of private equity, right? I mean, when you start out a business, you're just an individual business owner and you're thinking about how do you perform? How do you provide for your franchisees? And then all of a sudden you put your hard work in for 10 years, you got 200 locations, you're selling well. And then, you know, they knock on your door and you realize the real value of what you've created. So there's a tremendous value in it, but you can't think about it along the journey. I mean, you want to set things up the right way, but you can't, you know, focus too much on that part of it throughout the journey. You just got to put your head down and run your business. Couple of other things I learned is one, just like validation is important for bringing in new franchisees, it's uber important when private equity is thinking about buying your business. They want to know, what do your franchise think? Are they happy? Are they going to re-up for another term? Are they performing well? The other is, you better be in a positive same-store sales trajectory. In my opinion, anybody that tries to sell a business that's flat to down is just a warning sign of, we're trying to get out before the boat sinks.
Yeah.
Right. And so that positive trajectory, I mean, the private equity group that we eventually sold to, they sat on the sidelines and watched us for 12 months.
Wow.
And they watched to make sure that we moved in a positive way the entire time before they pulled the trigger. So that's so key. Obviously the people you partner with, that's a pretty obvious one, but you better be aligned on who's going to run it, how they're going to be involved, what the expectations are. All those things are very important. And last, and you know, I learned this through, you know, the stupid tax a little bit, but engage with an investment banker who knows what they're doing when it comes to packaging your business. I mean, you know, it's like trying to sell your home for sale by owner versus a real estate. A lot of times a real estate, they can go do 3D models and they know where to advertise and they know the price comps. And you might save a little bit on a percentage if you sell it by yourself, but what did you lose in overall purchase price? I mean, just think about that on a much
Well, in time, level. Right? I mean, it might take you three times as long trying to do it yourself versus working with someone that does know how to package it the right way. And we all know time is money. But that the reason I ask is because, you know, I've seen franchisees have their businesses purchased by private equity. It's not necessarily just franchisors. And, you know, that's something that I try to coach people through as they're thinking of getting into a franchise is you've got to at least put some thought into your end game, right? What's your exit strategy going to be? And that's part of the evaluation, right? Is there's some businesses that are easier to exit than others, right? Based on the scalability of the business model and any number of other factors. And a lot of people that takes them off guard a little bit, they're like, Wes, I haven't even decided what business I'm going to buy yet. And you're talking about exit strategy. And, you know, to your point, you don't want to count your eggs before they hatch, but at the same time, you need to put some thought into it. It could be 15, 20 years down the road. It could be 5 years down the road. It's different for different people, but you need to put a little bit of thought into it because the last thing you want to do is find yourself in a business where you realize 5 years into it that you're not going to be able to sell it when the time's right to, or when you'd like to.
Yeah, I got a couple of thoughts on that, especially for franchisees. You're absolutely right. I mean, when the private equity group bought Complete Nutrition, they spoke to a couple of our franchisees about coming along, some of our larger ones, right? So franchisees are absolutely targets. If you're in the right brand and you got the right economics and culture and everything else, you're a target for private equity just as well.
Yep.
But the other thing you think about is, like you said, think about the exit, right? And so franchisee comes in and they're validating the day-to-day business model. What do you do day-to-day? Is it profitable? Would you do it again? You know, tell us about the leadership, all that. Very rarely, and I think this is one of the most important questions asked, and very rarely is it asked, is tell us about people that have exited.
Yeah.
What was the process like when they exited? Is the franchisor supportive of franchisees selling to other franchisees? You know, are there a large enough franchise body, or does it look like it's growing into a large enough franchise body where maybe someday you can sell to other franchisees? That's the mm-hmm. other thing people don't realize is your number one buyers of franchise locations are existing franchisees.
Absolutely.
So is it a growing model that might be able to have people buy my business in the future? So many of those questions should be asked up front during validation.
Yeah, they should. And it's to your point, very rarely are they asked or even thought about. And I get it. And that's why, you know, someone like myself is in a position to kind of coach people to think about these things as they're evaluating different options. And the first franchise company I worked for, they got acquired by private equity, and that was about 5 or 6 years ago. So now this private equity company is, you know, ramping up to sell in all likelihood to another private equity company. So they're going and buying some of the top performing franchisees in that system because it's going to make their balance sheet look stronger when they go to sell. And I mean, there's been a couple franchisees that I know pretty well. I mean, they just got life-changing money for their franchise and they weren't even thinking about selling it, but it's the old saying, everything's for sale at the right price. And it just goes to show you that, you know, you build the right type of business and you know, you never know what could happen. But yeah, there's a lot of different factors that you need to be considering, including, you know, potential exit strategy. And, you know, to your point, is the system growing or showing signs that other franchisees may be in a position to buy your business? Because that's a lot of times one of the paths of least resistance when you are ready to sell. So those are some really good thoughts. And I love your story. It's fascinating, but I don't want to get too sidetracked because I do want to make sure we take plenty of time to talk about Franchise Fastlane, which is your current venture, and you gave us a little bit of the backstory there. But, you know, for those listening that may not be as familiar with a franchise sales organization, give us a little more detail on kind of what Franchise Fastlane is, who you work with, and why a company like Franchise Fastlane is necessary.
Yeah, I mean, to put it in simplest terms, we help franchisors find franchisees.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times people think, well, why? Why don't they go out and do it on their own? And I'm a believer, when you're a franchisor, you need to be great at whatever your core business is, ice cream, dry cleaning, fitness, service, whatever it is. Go be great at that and outsource everything else. I mean, in my Complete Nutrition days, we tried to move into distribution, and we should have just left that to the experts. Let the 3PLs do that. We're going to focus on product development, marketing. So that's true of all franchisors. Focus on your core product. And then most of them, they know their business, but they don't know how to go find franchisees in Dallas and North Carolina and Florida and Nebraska and Washington and everywhere else. And that's what we do. We have the people, the relationships, the understanding of marketing and everything else to know how to go find them. Now, the reality is that doesn't mean we want to go do it for everybody. We have a tremendous amount of time invested into these franchise brands. And so we like to say we represent the next big things. What are the next big things in their category? Who's going to be the next Massage Envy, Anytime Fitness, Five Guys Burgers, whatever it is. Whatever category it is we're looking at, we have a list of criteria that we want to see from these brands. They have to check every single box. If there's one missing, we won't take them on. And then once we do, we are a full turnkey outsourced franchise sales and development company. So we will build the marketing materials, the sales process. We'll help with the unit economics understanding, the budgeting, the FDDs, the discovery days, you name it. We're going to go out there and be a full turnkey. We like our franchisors to think about development 2 days a month. And that's the 2 days that we're bringing groups to Discovery Day, where they get an opportunity to meet them. They get an opportunity to put their business on display and then make a decision on who they think should be their partners into the future.
I like that. I like that way of thinking about it. And I mean, I know from experience in working with Franchise Fastlane and the brands that you represent, you guys do a fantastic job of that. But, you know, maybe share with us, and I don't want you to give away your secret sauce or anything, but maybe share with us a little bit, what are some of the most important criteria that you're evaluating of a franchisor that you're considering partnering with?
Yeah. Well, the first and I think where a lot of people fail is they compromise here and they're not willing to have those hard conversations. So I think sometimes people that are franchise sales companies, they ask what a franchisor is, they accept them as they are, and then they go out and try to sell and market it. Well, we don't do that. The first thing is we know we go into it and we make it very clear. We're going to have some hard conversations about your existing infrastructure, your FDD, whatever it is, because if we don't feel it's going to be attractive to a candidate, and if you can't support a candidate under it, then we're not going to consider you. But a few things are, I wrote a few of them down actually. So we like to see, and this is hard. It's why it's, you know, we got to do a lot of research to get there, but we like to see a 3-year ROI. Right. So if we have a $300,000 investment, we want to see an average net profit return for franchisees of $100,000. We might creep a little bit more towards 4 at times, but we really want to see a minimum of 3-year ROI. We want to see significant franchisor experience, right? Or if the person who started the business doesn't have franchisor experience, who on their leadership team does? We want to know this is not just going to be their first rodeo, and they know what they're doing inside of that space. We want to see unique selling proposition. I mean, we have a couple of brands that we represent right now, which are so cool and unique. Never would have thought of them on my own, but as soon as I said that, that's one of the best unique selling propositions I've ever seen.
I can think of a couple that come straight to the top of my mind.
Absolutely. I mean, when you see it in a video or anything else, you're like, wow, I understand the problem it solves. And I see, I don't know anybody else that's doing it. So we look for those types of things. We want great owners, collaborative, growth-oriented owners. We've worked with some brands that just have fantastic founders that are like, let's go, let's grow, let's figure it out, let's put the infrastructure in. We have others who like to kind of, just fight a little bit.
Yeah, they're a little resistant to maybe changes that they need to make because it's not the way they've always done it, but it's necessary to franchise the right way.
Yeah, and now that we've been able to build the reputation, we know that people will take our word at what we've seen work, and it's making that job easier and easier every day.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, we want to see the working capital, right? We dive into their bank accounts, their balance sheets. We'd say, how much working capital do you have? Let's talk. We lay out the exact budget for them on what we think it's going to run. We want them to know that franchise fees, in our opinion, are not the working capital that should run the business.
Right.
Working capital to run the business needs to come from existing royalties or other sources, because franchise fees many times are used on marketing and candidate attraction and and new franchisee training.
Yep.
And there's other things in there too. Like you said, we probably won't give the whole secret sauce away, but there's definitely plenty of things that we're going to check mark. And one, like I had mentioned, is do we feel we can confidently get in front of you and other people like you and say, we think this is going to be the next big thing.
Yeah. Well, and I can tell you from someone in my position, that's important. right? I mean, there's when I'm working with a candidate, and not all of the brands that Franchise Fastlane works with, I would necessarily fall into the emerging franchisor category, but many of them do. And when I'm working with a candidate, we're talking about a franchise company that is in more of the emerging category. I mean, I take the time to explain to them, look, at surface level, this is going to seem really risky, right? Because an emerging franchise concept doesn't have the track record of a more mature system. They're not going to have hundreds of franchisees out there that have been operating for years and years. You're not going to have as many franchisees to validate with. You may even have no franchisees to validate with. But if an emerging franchise company is partnered with a company like Franchise Fastlane, that removes a lot of the risk that would typically be associated with investing in an emerging franchise concept, because part of it is the level of due diligence that Franchise Fastlane does on the front end before they even agree to partner with and work with these companies. You're looking very closely at all of these key criteria to make sure that the foundation is solid enough that this thing can really, really go and support franchisees that you're going to help them bring in. That's important. And to me, that removes a lot of the risk. And that's a conversation I have with any candidate where we're talking about emerging concepts. And not all franchise sales organizations go to that level of due diligence. You know, we've both seen too many examples where companies are just focused on, you know, selling as many franchises as they can, and there's very little, if any, thought put into what happens with these franchisees after they buy. Are they going to be able to get their businesses open? Is the infrastructure in place to really support them in a short-term or a long-term capacity? So I think it's very important how thorough Franchise Fastlane is before you even decide to work with a company. And I can only imagine these days, because you guys do have a very solid track record at this point, you've established a fantastic reputation for yourselves. The phone's probably ringing a lot more today than it was several years ago with companies wanting to partner with you.
A lot more. But, you know, and two things I want to say to that. One, I couldn't agree with you more. So when a person is considering investing into an emerging franchise brand, they need to lean back on research points that make them feel more comfortable. So some of those things are going to be, you know, the few franchisees that may be there, what are they saying? Yeah. The other thing is going to be a recommendation from you or you know, a consultant, somebody that says, hey, I think you should take a look at this brand. And the third is we hope, while the Franchise Fastlane may not be somebody that they know well, we hope quickly they're going to hear the story of how much due diligence we do for them to feel confident that if we're representing them, they truly are one of the next big things. And when I keep saying the next big thing, because I want people to think about the brands that we represent, like the next Massage Envy, the next Pods, the next whatever it is. When those franchisees that got in early, they were in the same situation. They didn't have a tremendous amount of franchisees to go ask, hey, what is this like? But they got in early. And I mean, Massage Envy is a great example of that's been through a few rounds of private equity, and some of those franchisees have made huge returns. Yeah. And it was because they were willing to take the risk on the research that they were able to do early and get in early before people bought all the territories. Second thing I want to bring up is through that due diligence process, just looking at the numbers, last year we spoke to about 140 franchise brands to say yes to maybe six or seven.
Wow.
And that's as an entrepreneur, that hurts my heart a little bit. There's 130 franchise brands out there that would like to grow with us, but we just don't have a product for them. And many times it's because if we're going to allocate the amount of resources we do towards a brand, there's a certain volume of movement that we have to feel comfortable will be there.
Sure.
And so one of the things that I'm focusing on this year is a program that we just launched, and we're talking to our first few franchisors on it right now, and what we're calling the carpool, kind of the fast lane and the carpool. And the idea behind the carpool is these are for brands that want to award 10 or more units a year, very manageable, very, you know, their ability to keep up and keep franchisees satisfied in that level should be very possible for them.
Sure.
But they still don't necessarily understand the right things to do inside of franchise development. So what we do is we come in and we help them set up the front end. We help them look at the FDD. We help build the materials, and we will do all of the support services for them. So all the same things that you're used to getting through communication and technology and everything else, all of that's going to be set up. The one main difference is they are going to have the franchise development person hired on their team rather than our team. But then we are going to assign senior directors from our team, people that have awarded at least 200 units and been with us for 2 years. We are going to assign these people to those individuals to act as coaches and mentors to teach them the things that work. So now those 130 franchise brands that we maybe had to say no to in the past.
Now you have an option.
Yeah, they got options. And we still take them through a validation process, not as strict necessarily as the others, but we're going to take them through a validation process and help these emerging franchisors know how to grow responsibly.
So essentially you're building out a program to help some of these franchisors teach them how to fish instead of doing the fishing for them.
And the statistics are staggering. I mean, when you go and you look at FranConnect puts out an annual report, I think it's nearly 80 or 90% of candidates that inquire to a franchise never get contacted.
I know, it's sad.
Yeah, and you know, these franchisors are spending all this money out there, and it's because they know one out of 200 people that inquire might actually end up becoming a franchisee, so they just say that's not a good use of my time. We're going to teach them how to be better at that.
So that's interesting because I wasn't aware of that program. I think it's brilliant on your part. And I think there's a lot of franchisors out there that's going to be a really good fit for, and it's going to be a great option for them. It kind of brings up a question that I wanted to have you speak to, because I know I've gotten this question from candidates that I work with. So what would you say to someone that may be a little apprehensive to investigate a franchise company, knowing that their main point of contact, that they're going to be at least going through the first several stages of the investigative process with, is not actually a representative of the company, meaning they're not actually employed by the franchise company that they're investigating? Because that's really the case with Franchise Fastlane and your traditional model. They're Franchise Fastlane employees. They're not employed by the franchisor that they're essentially representing.
Yeah, I would say, well, first, they're going to learn pretty quickly when they're having conversations with these folks. They're going to know just as much as any employee ever would. I mean, we dedicate a director to a brand, right? So this person that's on our team is working on one brand and usually one brand only. And so they're eating, sleeping, breathing that brand. They're learning it. They're there every single month on site. And inside of our process, we give many opportunities to speak to people who are part of the brand. I mean, a minimum of once a week, usually twice a week, we're going to have a candidate on the phone with a franchisee or two and a member of the leadership team. So we might be actually walking them through an introduction presentation. We might be walking them through the item 7, item 19, and FDD and the territories. But every single week, they're going to be on the phone multiple times with people from that franchise brand.
Yeah, it's a good, I think it's a great way to do it, because to your point, these directors, they're pretty much living and breathing the brand that they're representing. It's not like they're getting off one call talking about one brand and then on to another call, you know, talking about another brand and having to keep track of it that way. So, to your point, you know, candidates pick up on that very quickly. Once they start having these conversations, they realize, hey, these folks are actually experts. They really know their stuff. So it's a fantastic, you know, program that you guys have. And I don't think anyone does it better. So
thank you.
I'm curious kind of where you see Franchise Fastlane going from here. And you've already shared a little bit about, you know, kind of this new program that you're rolling out. I mean, how many brands are you representing right now? Do you mind sharing that?
Yeah, 15 brands today. And it's funny you say that, because the intent of Franchise Fastlane when it was founded versus today is a little bit different. So the idea behind Franchise Fastlane when it was first founded was not only to help franchisors, but quite honestly, I wanted to stay plugged into franchising to maybe become a franchisor myself again. So, you know, how do you stay plugged into franchising? You go and you represent brands, you talk to a lot of people. When the right opportunity presents itself, go become a franchisor again alongside of Fastlane. Well, about 18 months to 2 years after the company was started, I really kind of did a little bit of self-examination, and I said, what is it that I want to do with my future? And I earlier in the call, I said how much I love this business, because every time I sell something, I feel like I'm changing someone's life. And that's not just lip service. I mean, truly, like, you are changing somebody's life. I teach my kids every day the value of business ownership, and I hope they start young, and they're going to make a lot of mistakes, but I hope they go and do that, eventually become business owners and to provide it for their family. But I made the pivot and said, you know what? I don't want to become a franchisor again. I want to be the absolute best in the world at franchise development. So people that have done this before us, I think a lot of them have moved into real estate and operations and, you know, other parts of franchising, which I understand. It's a natural progression. You know, you sell a franchise, now they need real estate. Why don't you go provide that for them? We've decided not to do that. We are going to be the best in the world at development. And today we are offering a very small niche of development, right? People that want to award quite a few units, only 15 brands. Now we're expanding into the carpool. We're also offering some marketing services now, only to our existing brands, but ways that they can better understand how to create funnels and, you know, helping them with SEO and the different social media marketing and things like that. We're providing some of those services. And eventually we hope to move into more and more development services, maybe international developments on the plate into the future. But we're going to be a franchise development company with multiple parts of franchise development under it. Even the franchise vault. I've already gone out and grabbed the franchise vault and all these things. These are eventually going to be training tools that we will be able to provide to other franchisors that want to understand the process and the things that work when it comes to attracting quality franchisees.
So the strategy is stick at what you're already the best at, continue getting better at it, expand the services that you offer versus kind of getting into some of these other verticals, I guess you could say, that many of the other development companies have, the real estate, the operations, and all that goes with that.
Yep, you bet. As long as we validate the front appropriately and we make sure the brands know how to support operationally, that is not something that we need to go try to be an expert in as well. I mean,
fair point.
Yeah, one of the books I love, Good to Great by Jim Collins, if you can't be number one or number two in the world, you shouldn't be in that space. So we're going to go out and be number one.
I love it. That's awesome. And you bring up another point that I wanted to ask you about, because you've been a franchisee, you've been a franchisor, you've started businesses that are not franchise businesses, Franchise Fastlane, it's not a franchise business. Yeah, you're providing services to franchise companies. What are some of the pros and cons in your mind? And let's talk specifically about first franchisor versus franchisee. I'm interested to hear from your experience. What's easier, being a franchisor or a franchisee?
What's easier, being a franchisee?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Being a franchisor was one of the most challenging things I've ever done. Very, very rewarding and one of the things I'm most proud of, but man, is it challenging. Especially, you know, if you have a lot of, if we were a fast growing brand, right? I mean, we went from 7 or 9 locations to awarding 240 locations in the next 18 months. And so we had a tremendous amount of infrastructure that we had to build. Being a franchisee, it's not easy necessarily, but to be able to step into a system that has branding, structure, assets, purchase power, a network of peers to be able to collaborate with, all of those things help the person be successful. As a franchisor, you are ultimately the person that people look at. Yep. To make sure you're providing the communication, the resources, and everything else. They're paying you a royalty for a reason. Yep. And so you need to be able to hold up your end of that bargain. Being a franchisee is easier.
Yeah, no doubt. And I agree, because I've been on both sides too. But it's always interesting to hear someone's perspective on that when they have been on both sides of the table. So on that note, pros and cons of being a franchisee versus an independent business owner.
Oh, sure. Structure, I think I mentioned it, network, resales. We had talked about that. You have a network of people, resales, the tools and the assets, the preferred pricing. I mean, the reason people buy in a franchise, and I think it's something like 60-some% of Americans want to be a business owner, but many of them don't want to take on the risk of starting their own business. So there's really two things you look at. You buy an existing business that has existing customers and is successful, but you pay a premium, which is okay for some people. You buy a premium, you work it into the numbers, or you go and you look at a franchise brand. And a franchise brand, maybe it's going to be a brand new company in your market or a brand new business in your market, but you have such a large network to be able to tap into to feel comfortable and confident that you can go have success like they have, right? Yeah. It's the whole idea behind the model.
Yeah, the networking piece is so key to me, and I find people overlook it. I mean, especially if it's a really strong franchise company. It doesn't mean it has to be the biggest or the oldest, but if it's strong, the value that you can get as a new franchisee, being able to learn from the other franchisees. Yes, you're looking to the franchisor for training and support and helping you get open and helping you get ramped up. And that's something that you should really evaluate and understand and feel confident in. But the value that you can get from being able to tap into this peer network of other franchisees that are running the same business as you. And when you're brand new, all the other franchisees have been doing it longer for you at that point. It's an absolute game changer if the franchise has a good culture of shared learning and franchisees have the willingness to help each other out. And that's something that I coach people to really try to understand, because I've seen firsthand for myself how big of an impact it can make.
Absolutely. Yep. And then you asked, what are some of the cons? Well, the first, I struggled putting this in the con bucket, but I'm going to put it there because I think a lot of people think of it this way. You're paying royalties.
Yeah.
And I hear some people say, why would I ever pay a royalty to somebody? And I personally think that is a lazy answer. And here's what I mean. A royalty is a price you're paying for a service or a value. And that's the service or value that the franchisor is going to provide, and branding and all those other things we just talked about. So really what a candidate needs to do is, in their research process, they find out, they go through the FDD to find out what the franchisor is providing. And they talk to existing franchisees to say, hey, is that 6 or 7 or 8%? Are you getting that amount of value back into your business? I saw it firsthand. I was in the GNC franchise world, and I saw all of the resources I got. Quite honestly, I took them for granted, because when we left that, and then eventually started Complete Nutrition, it took me probably 2 years before I felt like I was even close to being able to mimic or create some of the resources that we were getting to them. So how much money and time and everything did we waste in those 2 years trying to replicate the things that were already available for a 6% royalty? But yes, you do have to pay a royalty. Other thing is that you're going to be in a legal agreement, right? When you open your own business, you may or may not be in a legal agreement based on whether or not you have a physical retail lease. Other than that, it's probably not a legal agreement you're in. In a franchise agreement, there is. And you're not 100% in control, but excuse me, quite honestly, most people like that. You know, the idea of being in business by yourself is scary, but the idea of being in business by yourself, or for yourself, but not by yourself, is an easier proposition. So I have a network of people and a corporate office that is there to help me, and we can all support each other.
Yeah. I love your point about the royalties and the fees. And I may just clip that like 60-second part and play it on repeat when I'm on the phone with people that I'm working with. Cause it's a common objection. Well, why in the world would I want to pay a royalty, which is typically structured as a percentage of your gross revenue, back to the franchisor? And that's the exact point is, right, well, you got to understand what you're getting in exchange for that. And then it becomes a simple math calculation. I pay X, I get what? What is this worth? And if the value's not there, it's probably not a good deal. Don't do that franchise. I mean, in our shelf genie business, we have a 5% royalty. I save at least 15% on my cost of goods just by being a shelf genie franchisee. Plus, I didn't have to figure out supply chain. I don't have to figure out how I get everything shipped to me, manufacturing. And that's not even talking about the other services and support, actual tangible value that you can assign a monetary amount to. It's a no-brainer. Now, not all franchises are created equally, so that's part of the process that you should go through evaluating a franchise, is really understanding what are you getting in exchange for the fees that you're paying. And same thing with the franchise fees, right? I mean, most franchises, you have some sort of a territory that you're getting. It's actually an asset, right? You're getting that in exchange for the franchise fee. You're getting the initial training, the support. So there's really two facets that you have to understand. What are the upfront fees, and what do you get in exchange for those upfront fees? What are the ongoing fees, and then what's the ongoing support and the value associated with that? If you do a good job understanding this, it should be a pretty easy decision to make based on that. There's other things to consider, but as far as the fees go, it should be almost a no-brainer.
Yep, you hit it on the head. Absolutely.
I love it. So what advice would you have for, you know, an aspiring entrepreneur that, like you said, 60% of Americans say they want to be in business for themselves, yet 60% of Americans are not in business for themselves, right? So there's a lot of people that they've got this entrepreneurial itch, but they're kind of right there on the edge. They haven't really taken that plunge. And a lot of times it has to do with fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I mean, you're someone that's clearly, you know, taken many risks when it comes to being an entrepreneur. What advice would you give to someone that's close, but they're not quite there and they're struggling, and it's that fear, uncertainty, and doubt that's kind of holding them back?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put it in two buckets. One, for young people that are listening, I'm going to say start early and manage your downside. Right now, it's one thing I'm going to teach my kids. I want them to start early. I want them to have plenty. That's time value of money, no different than the stock market. Let them start early, let them build business experience and everything else that they need, and that's going to multiply over time. But manage the downside. I mean, the last thing that you want to do is have some sort of financial black eye on your record early, but if it's going to be there, you want it to be early. But managing the downside, meaning maybe your first franchise is going to be a service-based franchise where it's a man in a van, right? You're not going to have any kind of retail downside. You're not going to have to go out and borrow a significant amount, make it an SBA Express loan where really your guarantee is limited, things like that. So young people start early, manage the downside. For those that are in a different position, like corporate America, and they're trying to figure out a way, they've either lost a job or they're trying to figure out a way to replace a job, I'm going to tell you to do plenty of research where you're confident in your decision. I'd still think somewhat manage the downside. And one of the ways I personally franchise, and I love this method, find people that you trust, build a mutually beneficial situation, and go into business with them. I mean, I spend pretty much all my time at Fastlane and as a dad and a husband. So for the franchise businesses that I own, I don't have the ability to go in there every day. But my partner is somebody that I fully trust. We have a mutually beneficial relationship, and it works great for both of us. And I think for that person that's in corporate America, go look for those types of franchises, those types of people, and tiptoe your way into it. Because again, I think once you start to see it, you start to build up a little bit of income on the side, you understand it, then before you know it, you're able to replace your entire corporate income, and you can move in that direction, increase in freedom.
That's great advice. And you know, the thing that's fascinating to me about franchising in general is once you get into it, it's a small world, and you can make some of the best connections and build relationships that can last a lifetime. I mean, the guy that hired me at the first franchise company I worked for, he's one of the founders. And I mentioned earlier, they got acquired by private equity. He's a partner with us in one of our franchise businesses today, right? Yep. Boss, mentor, friend, now business partner. And we're in the process of buying another franchise here in our local market. And it's a good business. We wouldn't be buying it if it wasn't, but it's in a space that's fairly saturated. There's plenty of other franchises to choose from in that space. You know, I think they've got a few things that edge them out over the competition, but more than anything, I've gotten to know the founder and the CEO of that company, and I trust the guy, right? I mean, you've got to really trust the people that you're going to do business with. And to me, that makes it a no-brainer over the other options that are out there. Not that the other options are necessarily bad, but for us in this particular situation, it makes a big difference. And you bring up your franchise businesses, which is something I wanted to ask you about, right? Because you've got Franchise Fastlane, right? Companies growing at a tremendous rate. You've successfully exited some other businesses. I mean, I can't imagine you're struggling to pay the bills, yet you continue to invest in businesses as a franchisee. What's your motivation to continue doing that?
I love it. You know, yeah. I just believe in business ownership, and I can only do it when I have the right people with me to do it.
Yeah.
And so I would go buy 100 franchises tomorrow if I had 100 people that I just fully trusted and we could have that relationship together. So for me, there's no ceiling on the number of franchise businesses I want to own. My limitation is the ability to go find the people that I want to own them with.
Yeah. Well, I love that. And I'm still a few clicks behind where you are, but part of why I got into consulting was so I'd have kind of an inside track on great franchise opportunities, because that's absolutely a part of our strategy, is keep adding franchise businesses that we own. And this next one's going to be the first example of, I hope, many to come. It kind of, like you said, you started Fastlane. Part of it was to stay close to franchising and you know, keep an eye on the opportunities. So I can relate to that. It makes a lot of sense. So this has been great. I know everyone that listens is going to get so much value from it. Really appreciate it. Before I let you go, I've got a quick lightning round that I want to run through real quick. These are questions I ask everyone that comes on the podcast. So we'll run through that quickly if you're okay with it. So the first question is simply, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received? And that could be in business or just life advice in general.
Best piece of advice I've ever received is invest in yourself. I've tried to invest in many other things that I was not in control of, and I still do somewhat, but they've never produced the returns as invested in myself. So Warren Buffett says it, invest in yourself.
Yeah. And it's amazing. Like, I love these lightning rounds because I kind of get to hear answers to the same questions from all these successful entrepreneurs that come on the podcast. And no doubt that's been the most recurring answer to that question. Very cool. Next question. Do you have a morning routine of any sort? Something that you try to do every morning to prime yourself for a successful day? And if so, do you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah, you bet. I'm a creature of routine. So it's 6:15 up. It is the same breakfast every single day, which some people think is boring. A 3-egg omelet with ham and cheese, a yogurt with blueberries, peanut butter toast, and a cup of coffee.
Protein.
Yep. So while I am while I'm eating, I'm usually reading. From there, I go and I work out. So I do the 7:30 to 8:30 workout every morning at the local boutique fitness center. Okay. Go home, shower, and then I'm back at the office by 9 or 9:15, depending on what time I get out of the gym. So that's it every morning.
Yeah, I love it. I think, and we've talked about this with other guests, it's not so much about what your routine is, because what works for you may not work as well for someone else. But I think having that routine, because it does, it primes you to go and take care of whatever you need to that day versus waking up and kind of just winging it, right? So I don't think it's boring at all. You just mentioned reading. So I'm curious, what book are you reading right now?
The book like this, I switched to listening. I listen to books all the time, just like I try to read. I'm just about done with Atlas Shrugged for the second time.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's one of my favorites. It's very long. It's a 60 hour audio book.
Yeah.
But man, when you think about just the message in the book, it fires me up. So it's a good.
Someone brought that up to me a couple weeks. I read it back in high school. I think I had to read it. It was probably required reading back then, but yeah. I have a copy of it sitting on my shelf up here, and I also have it on Audible. I think it was like a free download at some point. So I was like, it's like 60 hours. I listen to Audible on 2.0 speed, so I can get through a book in half the time. It's still 30 hours. Like that's a commitment, but that one's kind of been in the back of my mind as something I should try to tackle again.
Totally.
So I'm a big fan of audio books too. All right, final question. What is your definition of freedom, and are you living it?
Yeah, my definition of freedom is one, I know it sounds cliche, but I love what I do. So that's the first thing. I'm free. I am free in my mental state is so strong right now because I am free in the confidence I have in what I do. And then of course, my ability to be with my family during major moments. I love to work. I mean, after Complete Nutrition, I was probably in a position where I didn't have to anymore.
Right.
But that was not the choice that I wanted to make. I mean, I have four boys. The oldest was 5 years old. The last thing I wanted them to see was retired dad for their entire child. They weren't going to remember anything that went into Complete Nutrition. So
sure. Yeah.
I wanted to produce. I wanted to work, and I wanted it to be something that I was proud of. So my definition of freedom is my ability to go produce and to do and to make it something that I love. And then, of course, I love the outcome of that, the financial side, the freedom and everything else that it gives me. But ultimately, it's because I'm able to produce what I want to.
And then you still have the time to be with your family when it matters most because you have that control over your schedule. I love that. I think that's what it's all about. Well, Ryan, man, I really appreciate it. This has been fantastic. I've learned a lot just from talking to you today. I know everyone else listening in will learn from you as well. And just wanted to take a minute to acknowledge you for everything you're doing at Franchise Fastlane. You guys have an amazing company. I think you're doing it the right way. You're partnering with great brands. You're helping great franchisors find great franchisees. I think it's fantastic. Keep up the good work, man. Really appreciate you dropping in on the Path to Freedom podcast with me.
Well, ditto, Wes. Thanks for having me, and I really appreciate your support.
Absolutely. Thanks. Thanks for dropping in with me on this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. I hope you got a ton of value and learned something new. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Path to Freedom podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please share with someone else that may also get value from it. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can take steps to getting into business for yourself, I'd love to speak with you. Connect with me online at pathtofreedom.com. That's path, the number 2, FRDM.com. Or shoot me an email at wes@pathtofreedom.com, spelled the same way. And if you know anyone else that may be interested in speaking with me, I'd love to meet them. Please forward this podcast along to them and encourage them to reach out. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Now go drop in.